My lesson about evolution, a little longer tonight, but we're hitting the one of the main themes of evolution, that is natural selection. Organic evolution has never been observed, and yet the one thing that you hear all the time, even though, as we will see, it has been disproved and basically eliminated many, many years ago, even before Darwin championed it. It's just that example that they have to believe this, or they're left with creation. And if creation, then a creator, and then somebody they've got to answer to. We can't stand for that, can we? We can't let somebody tell us what to do, be judging us, you see. And yet, that will happen. So natural selection. Let me just define some terms. An offspring of a plant or an animal has characteristics that vary, often in subtle ways, from those of its parents. So the rose plant seeds will grow and look something like the parent rose, but perhaps some changes. Because of the environment, genetics, and chance circumstances, some of these offspring will reproduce more than others. More than others would mean more likely to live on. So, species with certain characteristics will tend, on average, to have more children. The question is, does this comprise evolution, or is it just changing within the species? So, in this sense, nature selects genetic characteristics suited to an environment. In other words, if a strong rabbit produces a strong rabbit, that rabbit will run faster and be more likely to escape from the eagle or the dog. I even saw a picture of a deer eating a rabbit when they get hungry and need the nourishment. I'll eat meat. Different picture of Bambi and Thumper there. But anyway, that suits them to the environment where they're being chased a lot. And more importantly, eliminates unsuitable genetic variation. So genetic variations, the cosmic rays coming down from outer space and bombarding the DNA can cause one rabbit to only be born with three legs, and that will be a genetic change. But that rabbit is not likely to survive very long, therefore not going to produce many children. There won't be many of the three-legged ones around. So, what does this mean? Well, therefore, an organism's gene pool is constantly decreasing. So, if all the children were perfect, all of them strong, all of them healthy, plants or animals, then that gene pool would stay large. But because there have been certain changes, certain genetic mishaps, that gene pool is decreasing. This is called natural selection. In 1835 and again in 1837, Edward Blythe, a creationist, published an explanation of natural selection. I want you to see that there is no necessary contradiction between natural selection, scientific natural selection, and believing in creation. Later, Charles Darwin adopted it as the foundation for his theory. Darwin failed to credit Blythe for his important insight. And you can check that out, evolutionist Lawrence C. Isley, Darwin and the Mysterious Mr. X. This is Mr. Blythe that he failed to quote, that he failed to credit. Darwin also largely ignored Alfred Russel Wallace, who had independently proposed the theory that is usually credited solely to Darwin. Darwin published the theory of evolution in a brief note in the Annals and Magazine of Natural History in 1855, a note that Darwin read. So this is where his ideas came from, borrowed from another man. March 9th, 1858, Wallace explained the theory in a letter to Darwin, 20 months before Darwin published his theory of evolution. We're not going to think that he didn't know, that he forgot. They were communicating. On March 9th, I'm sorry, that was it, a letter to Darwin. Edward Blythe also showed why natural selection would limit an organism's characteristics to only slight deviations from those of all its ancestors. Instead of making them bigger and stronger and that spreading, the whole natural selection thing reduces it. 24 years later, Darwin tried to refute Blythe's explanation in a chapter in his The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection. November 24, 1859. Darwin felt that with enough time, isn't that the great cry? Give us enough time and anything's possible. Gradual changes could accumulate, that somehow the natural changes would find their way down into the genetic structure. Charles Lyell's writings in 1830 had persuaded Darwin that the earth was at least hundreds of thousands of years old. James Hutton's writings back in 1788 had convinced Lyell that the earth was extremely old. They hadn't got to millions and billions yet, because what they were proposing didn't seem that outrageous. Lawrence C. Isley said this: Darwin was confronted by a genuinely unusual problem. The mechanism, natural selection, by which he hoped to prove the reality of evolution, had been written about most intelligently by a non-evolutionist. He's referring to Edward Blythe. So, geology, he says, the time world, which it was necessary to attach to natural selection in order to produce, hopefully, the mechanism of organic change, that geology had been beautifully written upon by a man, Charles Lyell, who had publicly repudiated the evolutionary position. So the time world, the time clock for evolution, had already been investigated and found wanting to propose anything like evolution. Charles Darwin also plagiarized, plagiarized to write down something and say it's your work when you actually took it from somebody else. He also plagiarized in other instances, and you can check this out if you choose to. Jerry Bergman, Did Darwin Plagiarize His Evolutionary Theory? That's in the Technical Journal, Volume 16, Number 3, 2002, pages 58 to 63. His answer was yes, he did. Notice, natural selection cannot produce new genes. It can wipe out handicaps, you see, that can't protect themselves, or that they're born with defects that kill them. It can't produce new genes. It doesn't automatically change the children, even if they have children. It selects only among pre-existing characteristics. So things will change, but only within the bounds of of those characteristics. So, as the word selection implies, variations are reduced, not increased. Reduced. Does that look very small? I'm using my my other computer, and according to that, this was 28, like I always use, 28 thing. But it looks very small to me. All right. Adventures in computers. Having turned my old one in. So, if you have a group of things and you select them, you're taking that and leaving the rest. See, it reduces. So, Daniel Brooks, quoted by Roger Lewin, "A Downward Slope to Greater Diversity in Science," 1982, natural selection, is what he's talking about, may have a stabilizing effect, but it does not promote speciation, developing different species. It is not a creative force, as many have suggested. And of course, that's the drum of evolution. Stephen Jay Gould, Return of Hopeful Monsters, the strange, weird things that return to help you up, "The essence of Darwinism lies in a single phrase. Natural selection is the creative force of evolutionary change. No one denies that natural selection will play a negative role in eliminating the unfit, the ones that are born lame, the ones that are born mentally feeble, whatever like that. Darwinian theories require that it create the fit as well. For example, many mistakenly believe that insect or bacterial resistances evolved in response to pesticides and antibiotics." I've heard this on commercials, that all the pesticides, and then they just evolve a way around it. That's not likely to be true. In fact, we have a series of evidences here. But instead, one or more of the following occurred. So here's what's really happening when you see this. A lost capability was reestablished. We had mentioned about the blind fish in the Black Cave. And when they were moved out of that water, they had eyes. That was a capability that was lost because of their surroundings, making it appear that something evolved. But that's not how it really did it. Another way, a mutation reduced the ability of certain pesticides or antibiotics to bind an organism's proteins. Instead of making it resistant to it, it just changed it enough that that pesticide or whatever didn't work on it, not response to the pesticides. Thirdly, a mutation reduced the regulatory function or transport capacity of certain proteins. So the proteins itself aren't functioning like they were, so the pesticide or whatever doesn't work. A damaging bacterial mutation or variation reduced the antibiotic's effectiveness even more. And this was discussed by Eric Penrose in Creation Research Society Quarterly back in 1998. Another and a last one is a few resistant insects and bacteria, listen to this, were already present when the pesticides and antibiotics were first applied. That the resistant bacteria, already existed before the pesticides and the antibiotics. And we know this. When the vulnerable insects and bacteria were killed, resistant varieties had less competition, therefore proliferated. Well-preserved bodies of members of the Franklin expedition frozen in the Canadian Arctic in 1845. They found these bodies, and they brought them home. And checking to see how they died and so on, they found that these bodies died in 1845 contain bacteria resistant to antibiotics. What's strange about that? Well, the first antibiotics were developed in the early 1940s, 90 years later, you see. Well, 100 years later. That means that these resistant bacteria could not have evolved in response to antibiotics. It didn't exist for 100 years. But there was bacteria already there that if the antibiotics had been there, it would have resisted it. Contamination has been eliminated as a possibility because one of the things, well, you guys just got the, gave that bacteria to the frozen bodies. No, they ruled that out. And that is talked about in Eerie Human Arctic Fossils Yield Resistant Bacteria, written in 1988. Francisco J. Ayala, The Mechanism of Evolution, Scientific American, 1978. The genetic variants required for resistance to most diverse kinds of pesticides were apparently present in every one of the populations exposed to these man-made compounds. So wherever they went, there were already some that were resistant. It was not a response by evolution. While natural selection occurred, nothing evolved. And in fact, some biological diversity was lost, not enhanced. The variations Darwin observed among finches on different Galapagos Islands is another example of natural selection producing micro, not macro, evolution. Changes, little changes within a species, not one species to another. While natural selection sometimes explains the survival of the fittest, it does not explain the origin of the fittest. How did it become fittest, you see? Soren Lovtrup, trying to sound Norwegian, I guess, I don't know. Darwinianism, the refutation of a myth. Darwin complained his critics did not understand him, but he did not seem to realize that almost everybody, friends, supporters, and critics, agreed on one point. His natural selection cannot account for the origin of the variations, only for their possible survival. The reasons for rejecting Darwin's proposal were many. But first of all, that many innovations cannot possibly come into existence through accumulation of many small steps. And even if they can, natural selection cannot accomplish it, because incipient, what's actually within, and intermediate stages are not advantageous. There's an old picture of a squirrel and a bat, I think, and in the middle is the flying squirrel, you know. But the things in between couldn't climb the tree and couldn't fly yet. So they should have been wiped out immediately because they were a deficient species. Not advantageous at all. Michael Behe, I have his book on Darwin's Black Box, and he was pointing out that Darwin didn't understand the smallest of living creatures. He just designated them as primal or simple. It wouldn't take too much to mix some chemicals and make a little protozoa or something. And now he found that they're immensely complex. But he also wrote Molecular Machines, Cosmic Pursuit, 1998. It was a shock to the people of the 19th century, 1800s, when they discovered from observations science had made that many features of the biological world could be ascribed to the elegant principle of natural selection. It is a shock to us in the 20th century to discover from observations science has made that the fundamental mechanisms of life cannot be ascribed to natural selection and therefore were designed. Didn't just happen. But we must deal with our shock as best we can and go on. The theory of undirected evolution is already dead, but the work of science continues. Anybody that tells you differently hasn't been paying attention to what's being said, what's been going on. Today, some people think that because natural selection occurs, evolution must be correct. Actually, natural selection prevents major evolutionary changes. In 1980, the Macroevolution Conference was held in Chicago. They're being very specific. See, 1980, not that too long ago. All the scientists coming together, focusing on How does a species change to a different species? Roger Lewin, writing for Science, described this conference as a turning point in the history of evolutionary theory. The turning point was not a good turning point for them. It was not, oh, well, how that explains everything. It was focusing on the fact that natural selection dismally fails to explain any of this. He says, writing in Science, Evolution Theory Under Fire, written in 1980, page 883, the central question of the Chicago conference was whether the mechanisms underlying microevolution, that's natural selection, can be extrapolated to explain the phenomena of macroevolution. At the risk of doing violence to the positions of some of the people at the meeting, the answer can be given as a clear no. You can't work that to change species. Again, Roger Lewin, on page 884, says, in a generous admission from Francisco Ayala, a major figure in propounding the modern synthesis, neo-Darwinism, in the United States, he said, with his generous admission, he said this, we would not have predicted stasis, the stability of species over time. I had mentioned to you, we wouldn't have dogs and cats and lizards. We'd have four-legged creatures of some size, but no definite, you know, that. We wouldn't have predicted that from population genetics. But I am now convinced from what the paleontologists say that small changes do not accumulate. We don't have intermediate species. Just not there. So, all that to say, when somebody says it's just natural selection, you say, well, that limits the animal, but it doesn't produce a new one.